So glad to hear. Can you hear me well?
I can hear you.
Excellent, excellent. Because I was worried about the technicalities. I was worried we're going to have problems. How are you? It's great to see you. I've been missing your videos, and now you're live here. It's like a dream come true, really.
Yeah. Where are you, by the way?
I'm in Poznan, Poland.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did a book tour in Poland.
Yes,
about 5 years ago. Traveled all over Poland.
Yeah, are you planning to come back?
If Allah wills it, I will come back. They're going to bring out my book. What's the name of it? Jewish
Catholic Church and the Cultural Revolution.
Vectory Publishing House is going to bring out the Catholic Church and the Cultural Revolution. It's a short book. So they just contacted me and said they want to do some interviews with me, but I don't know whether they're going to bring me over for a book tour.
Right. Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to it. You should come. It's going to be interesting in Poland real soon. You know, with all the extortion group called the WJRO, the World Jewish Restitution Organization. I was going to talk to you about this. Was like the most interesting part. I wanted to talk to you about. I was going to start off with something a bit philosophical, maybe, if I may. I was speaking to this girl like on the elevator today, and what struck me is I was trying to make some small talk about the weather forecast. That's going to be really hot like next week, and she said she don't care because she lives kind of day by day, and this is the sort of attitude I've been like seeing a lot lately. Mostly within like young people, they're kind of like nihilistic, kind of, you know, this, they even promoted now this Billie Eilish, the pop idol. It's all about like nihilistic lifestyle.
All right. So you want to add so the girl on the elevator says she doesn't think about the future.
Yeah.
This is the key to what she's saying. She doesn't feel that she has a future. This is a serious condition. I'm assuming she was a young woman.
Yes.
This is a serious condition. I've noticed this condition in Iran, traveling around the country. There is a sense of unresolved conflict in Iran that leads to a lack of faith in the future. And the main manifestation of that is failure to reproduce. So I was in a mosque in Tehran. I gave a talk on libido dominandi. And at that point, at the end of it, I asked how many of the men were married and how many went down the line. They raised their hand, about 20 men raised their hand. I went down the line. Not one man had one child. So you have a serious crisis in Iran because you've at the university, you're kind of trained in both. You're trained to be, I'm talking primarily about women now. You're trained to be a scientist. And your religion is Islam. And these two things do not fit together. They are not compatible. And as a result, and the problem here is that there is no philosophical bridge between these two things that they're being taught. And so they've reached a state of crisis. The women have reached a situation where they succeed, they get a degree, they get a job, and suddenly they wake up and they're 35 years old. They're a nuclear physicist who doesn't have a family, and they don't know what to do. And there's no way, there's no common vocabulary that can link these two things together for them. So they're isolated. They don't know what to do. And I suspect that you have a similar problem in Poland. The difference is that Catholicism does provide a coherent example if you do it, if you can do it. And that's the whole point. Sometimes the church is in a position where it can't provide a coherent explanation of the culture. It's potentially there, but it's not actually there. And I'm dealing with this this issue in the book that I'm writing now. It's the book on Logos, which I'm almost finished. A similar type of crisis swept through the United States during the 1950s and 1960s. Thomism. The church had officially established that the teaching of St. Thomas Aquinas was the official philosophy of the Catholic Church. They established that in 1871 with Leo XIII's encyclical Aeterni Patris. This resolved all sorts of difficulties with modern philosophy. It set a philosophy up on a new basis, and it then moved from France to the United States. And in the United States, a lot of the Frenchmen like Jacques Maritain, Étienne Gilson, Yves Simon, a number of people, Frenchmen, came over to the United States, and they were clear in their idea that the United States of America was the new home of Catholic philosophy, of Thomism, and what I would say, Logos. And all of that collapsed because of a lot of complicated situation, largely because it was murdered by people who didn't want it to succeed. But as a result, that connection did not get made. Or let me put it this way, the connection was made, and then it was deliberately broken during the Cultural Revolution of the 1960s. That's what happened in Notre Dame. I'm not familiar enough with the situation in Poland to tell you what happened there, but I suspect that something similar is happening right here. Poland is under assault in the same way that Ireland is under assault. Ireland is a Catholic country. Ireland does not have the intellectual tradition that Poland has. It just doesn't have it, and it succumbs. But even with a country like Poland, with that intellectual tradition, the question is, are you going to be able to transmit it to the next generation? That's the crucial issue, and I think that's what we're seeing in this woman. She feels that there's no future because she can't connect all of these forces in her life and make some type of coherent picture about what's going on.
Yes. What, would Islam not have a answer to that then? They like really pro-family with, you know, with the teachings of Islam.
I have a whole chapter on Islam in the Logos book. I mean, basically, the intellectual tradition collapsed under Islam largely because of the influence of the Arabs, who were not an educated people. And they imposed their views on the Persians, who were an educated people, but it collapsed there as well. So it could not succeed there. Okay. It just failed with Averroes. Okay. But it succeeded in the West. The question is, can they resurrect it now? That's the big question. Tell me again what you just said. Give me that question.
Would Islam not have an answer to family problems that this girl was having? Because you said
okay, that's what I wanted to talk about. Yeah. Specifically, when the Ayatollah took over in Iran in 1979, there was a huge demographic surge. Everybody was energized by the Islamic Revolution, and all the families had seven or eight children. Then in 1989, the Ayatollah died, and he was replaced by the Ayatollah Khamenei, the current supreme leader, and he introduced birth control to Iran. Now, this was one, he has since said that it is the biggest mistake he ever made in his life, and he begs Allah for forgiveness for doing this. It was a catastrophic mistake because what happened is that you had the biggest drop in fertility history in the history of birth control. Happened in Iran over the 10-year period from 1989 to 1999. So the Supreme Leader has issued a statement saying, I made a mistake. Let's put the toothpaste back in the tube. We're going to discontinue all birth control programs. I want every woman to go out and have a child. Well, it's easier said than done. You know, once you do the damage, then it's hard to get back to where you were. And that's the crisis that Iran is facing right now.
Right. Well, there's more than that. I mean, America's kind of, you know, hanging around there. And I'm kind of worried that we as Poles are going to get dragged into this conflict. You know, like President Trump is coming to Poland like next week. And I think he's just being, you know, nice to us because we kind of respond well to these kind of niceties, but we don't really want anything back. And we just kind of all in with America, and we have no conflict with Iran. You know, we've always been it's always been a friendly nation to us. And I'm kind of like really worried that this is what's going to happen now. This next visit is going to be something kind of a bait.
Yeah, Trump is going to use you. He's going to try and use you as a way of attacking Russia. The biggest problem in Poland is Russophobia. That's the biggest problem. I understand why you feel the way you do about Russians. Okay, I understand that.
Yeah.
But that was then, and this is now. And the biggest threat to world peace is not Russia right now. It's the United States of America, and because of its connection with Israel. Israel, United States, that's the biggest threat to world peace. So if you're smart, you will not put American missiles on Polish soil. It's like painting a bullseye on your back. Americans will abandon you the same way the English abandoned Gdańsk, okay? Yeah. The same way they abandoned Poland in 1939. The Americans will do the same thing. So it's up to you. I know about Polish history. I know the way you feel about Russians. I've experienced it firsthand, okay? I was in Krakow having dinner with a member of the European Parliament. I said one nice thing about Vladimir Putin, and he put his fork down.
I've heard that. Sorry.
I said the second nice thing about Vladimir Putin, and he got up and walked away, and he left his meal on the table. So I know the feeling there, but you've got to get over this. This is about reason and not about emotion here.
Yeah.
Who's pushing the gay agenda? Who's pushing the homosexual agenda? Is it Russia or is it the United States? And the European Union, who's pushing it?
Well, it seems like there's more than one group, actually. This is the next thing I was going to talk to you about, because you know, when we joined the EU and we thought we finally joined the good guys, we're going to sit with the good guys, and it seems like it's another type of extortion, really, and no one was really awaiting us there, because we were in Poland and thought, like, you know, the finally, we're going to join the rest of the world, and they will accept us. They've been waiting for us. And apparently, there was no one waiting. They're just waiting for this, for the manpower and for the slaves.
Cheap labor.
And the worst thing is that they're communists. Like, EU is just a different type of communist. And they're pushing the LGBT agenda, as well as the Israelis with the America. So, well, if Russia is the only place to turn to, I think I'd rather, you know, stick with the America, despite the issues that we might be having. That's like, you know, the lesser evil kind of problem that we have here all the time. You know, choosing between Russia and Germany, it's like choosing between, you know, being hit with a hammer and stabbed with a knife.
Why don't you move your country then?
Move your country.
Who put your country between Russia and Germany? That was a dumb move. Why don't you move it someplace?
Yeah,
turn it into an island off the coast of Africa. Maybe that'll solve your problem.
That would be nice. Yeah, if we could move it like that. Dr. Jones, I was going to talk to you about something more serious now, actually, because not sure if you're familiar with priest Franciszek Blachnicki. He was a survivor of Auschwitz German death camp. Founder of OASA and the International Light Life Movement, a very important figure in the Christian Catholic movement in Poland. And he's helped many people to believe that there's hope under communist occupation. And what happened to him is he was killed, basically. There's no proof for it, but the most likely killed by Soviet Polish agents, husband and wife, Bolshevik Soviet Polish Jews, whose previous name was Lange. They have infiltrated the movement, managed to eliminate it from Poland, and then they followed the priest to his exile to Karlsberg in West Germany, actually. This is why I thought this might interest you, because I know you're familiar with all the Germanist Catholic history and everything. And the reason why I bring this up, I'm sorry if I'm, this story is taking too long. The reason why I bring this up is this, the female agent, has now popped up in like yesterday's news as a LGBT advisor for Warsaw's mayor. Warsaw left winger mayor has got some kind of LGBT advisors for tolerance and this kind of issues, and she's one of them. The person who it's very likely that she actually killed the priest, because she was the last person to see him, and then he stopped breathing. This was the official cause of his death, was that he, after speaking to them and confronting them on being agents, He died. He died, but it was of natural causes. This is the official cause of death. So it's not like I'm accusing anyone, but it's very likely that they had some involvement in this. And I was going to ask, how is it that these kind of, because the female agent and her husband as well, they were from like Bolshevik communist families.
I mean, I wrote The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit to explain phenomena like this. I don't know whether she's Jewish or not, okay? But the what you see with the Jewish revolutionary spirit is it manifests itself in different ways at different periods of time. So at one point, the cutting edge of the Jewish revolutionary spirit was Bolshevism. And the takeover of Russia and the creation of the Soviet Union was their big accomplishment at that point. These movements, they live for a time and then they die. But they're reborn as other revolutionary movements. And so what you saw in the United States was the revolutionary movement that the Jews started here with black people was created by institutions like the NAACP. They wanted to start a race war with the blacks, okay? And there were Jewish organizations that did that. That movement lasted for about 70 years, and it collapsed in 1967. And it was replaced 2 years later by the homosexual movement. The homosexual movement is now the avant-garde of the revolutionary movement in the United States. And because of the United States' role as the world hegemon, that it applies to the entire world now. So that's the way I would explain it. There are just various phases of a revolutionary spirit.
Well, I mean, I will be a kind of devil's advocate now, but is this state of the world that we're living now with all the issues that we're facing, you know, like immigration and everything, would there not be a call for some kind of revolution, really? Would we not need the Jews with their revolutionary spirit to kind of, you know, like maybe work with them? Is there a way to maybe work with them?
Can you work with Jews? Is
yes.
that what you're asking?
Yes, I know it's kind of a weird question.
Yes,
but
you can work with Jews if you want to be a revolutionary. If you want to be a counter-revolutionary, you will never be able to work with Jews. If you believe in the Polish nation, the autonomy of the Polish nation, if you believe that the Catholic Church is the soul of the Polish nation, you will never be able to work with these people. No, because everything they believe is the opposite of that.
Okay. Right, well, that kind of answers my question.
I don't think this is going to change. The whole point of the Jewish revolutionary spirit is I'm covering 2,000 years of history. It's not just yesterday and the day before yesterday. And over this period, a consistent pattern emerges that began with the crucifixion of Christ and goes right up to the day. These people hate Logos. That is the essence of their identity. And if you are a defender of Logos, they will be working against you. Whether the Logos is the sexual nature of man or whether it's the social order or whatever it is, they will be your enemy because they are, as St. Paul said, enemies of the entire human race.
Right. So you've brought up Logos, and it comes up a lot in all your interviews. I'm not going to ask you about the origin of Logos. I'll send our viewers to explore the BitChute maybe, or Culture Wars, where you can see the rest of Dr. John's videos. But when it comes to Logos, you know, I have a personal kind of question. When do you know that Logos is kind of speaking to you, that you should stop here, like, say, have a family, or maybe you should be a lone wolf and go against the world and, you know, or try to make something out of yourself? How do you know? Is there signs, like, we should read, or how do you, you know?
Yes.
How do you,
The first voice of Logos is your conscience. And your conscience is an expression of practical reason or the moral order. So if you want to get attuned and get good ears, good hearing when it comes to the voice of Logos, you have to follow your conscience and do what live according to the moral law. And then your hearing will become especially acute over that period of time. But that's the beginning of it. That's the beginning. And then if you have
So how do you train to hear to Logos? How do you train yourself to respond better to this little voice inside your head?
when the voice is telling you to have anonymous sex with 15 different men in the men's room down the hall, you start to know that this is not the voice of Logos, and you ignore it, and that voice dies out, and then another voice takes its place. I'm saying you have to listen to, first of all, to the moral order and act according to it. Listen to your conscience and act according to it. Now, you don't grow up in a vacuum. You have the Catholic Church as the arbiter and guide to the moral law, in addition to other things. So you're born into a context where you're supposed to follow the Catholic Church. That's good advice, too. I'm just saying, in the abstract, this is what we're talking about here. Follow. Yeah. The church supports culture. The church supports the moral order. If you follow all of those things, your mind will be freed from unruly passion, and you'll be able to perceive the truth and the reality of the situation. We have a situation in South Bend, Indiana, where we have a gay mayor who's running for president. This man is completely encircled in a bubble of narcissism. He can't see anything but the reflection of himself every time he looks out into the world. He is constitutionally incapable of representing the interests of the people of South Bend, Indiana, because he can't even perceive what those interests are. Everything comes through this bubble of narcissism. I'm saying that's an extreme example of the opposite of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, must be a common thing, because we have a gay mayor that's running for the prime minister, but his chances are really slim.
This is the infallible sign that this man is working for the oligarchs for the destruction of the Polish people. I said it when I did my book tour. I said any Polish politician who supports the gay agenda is a traitor to the Polish people and should be treated as such.
I was going to ask you, with regards to all this masculinity crisis, actually, how can you be, because they keep saying that, oh, that there's a masculinity crisis that we are having and men are not being men anymore. But how can you be a man if you're not allowed to say what you want? You're not allowed to, you know, think. You're a wage slave. You can't really be any kind of manly authority to anyone.
You can't. If you're constantly in fear of what other people think of you because you're not being politically correct, you're not being manly, you're not being courageous, because vir has to do, virtus and vir are the same root. Okay? Man and virtue are the same root. If you want to be manly, you have to be virtuous, which means acting according to reason. You have to be able to do that. If you're not doing that, you're not going to be perceived as manly. Now, let's take a step back here. I just celebrated my 50th wedding anniversary. And I gave a little speech. Thank you. I gave a little speech at the party. And I said, basically, if I came to me and asked me for my daughter's hand, I would turn me down because I was completely inadequate to the task. So nobody, in a sense, when you're 20 years old, which is what I was, nobody is, in a sense, adequate to the task, but you become adequate to the task because you decide you're going to do it. And some woman accepts you, and that's the beginning of your real masculinity. That's the whole point. And all of this type of stuff that we're talking about, whether it's homosexuality or pornography, the purpose of it is to thwart any type of fruitful marriage. Because the oligarchs want rootless individuals who are completely cut off from the church and the tradition and everything else.
Some might argue that you've had it easier back then, looking for a wife. And now, you know, with all these promiscuous girls and everything, it's really hard. And people, men especially, don't want to get into marriage. Seems like a trap to a lot of people. Even in Poland these days, it's, you know, I keep hearing like this MGTOW movement is gaining momentum. What do you think about this? Like,
what do you want me to do? Take you back in my time machine to 50 years ago?
That'll be nice.
I'd love to do that, but I don't have a time machine. So it's your. I had problems too 50 years ago. Everybody has problems when they're 20 years old. That's nothing but problems. Okay, and you're going to have to deal with the world as it exists right now. But there were people When I gave that talk in Warsaw on libido dominandi, there were couples who came up to me and said that they were impressed by what I said and they were now going to get married. So it's happened. It can happen now. You know, as soon as people start to wake up to the reality of the situation and the fact that all of these things are not liberation, they're the opposite of liberation, then they back away from and the mind clears up. And when your mind clears up, you become more attractive to members of the opposite sex in both ways. So this is what's happening with people, even like Roosh. I don't know whether you saw my interview with Roosh. Man who slept with 1,003 women in Spain alone. He's bigger than Don Juan, okay? And he changed, right? So if he can change, anybody can change.
That's true. It's kind of, he changed when it's, you know, is there a certain time that a man reaches, like, and it's something natural in his head maybe reminds him of, you know, a change happens naturally, or is it something that we should push to change ourselves? Like, I'm 30, I definitely 35 now. I feel different than I would, and feel and think different than I was 25, 18, and it kind of happened. You know, I wasn't pushing for anything, but it changed, absolutely changed.
Nothing human happens without the intellect and the will collaborating. You're not a salmon, okay? Salmon don't choose to have sex. You do. And not only that, you have to choose the partner, you know? That none of this happens in the animal world, but this is the way human beings work. So you have to clear up your mind, first of all, and then get a clear understanding of the forces that are against you, and then start looking around for some way to get out of this mess. The only way out, the only natural way out of the mess is to form a family, because that is the cell that protects you from all of these pernicious influences. I mean, it's not complete protection. It's not magic, but it is the natural way to protect yourself from all of these pernicious influences.
Yeah. Well, is it important to create more than just a family cell, to organize in like bigger groups, perhaps?
Of course it is. But not everyone is called to do that, whereas the overwhelming majority of the human race are called to form families. Other people have gifts. Maybe you're a great politician. Maybe you can mobilize the entire country the way Lech Wałęsa did in the 1980s, but that's the exception.
Lech Wałęsa, he's the kind of fallen hero. You know, did you know that he's been working for the communists all along, actually, even after the roundtable discussions that were supposed to free the Poland from communists? It actually turned out that we were led all along, and he was, you know, all along to like late 2000s, we were still a communist state, apparently. And
I know Jurek Prishtava. He was a physics professor in Wrocław. And he got involved. You have to separate. There are two things here. There is the liberation from communism, and then there is the privatization that took place after that. That's when Jeffrey Sachs came in and basically organized the looting of Poland. And then when he did that, he went to Russia and he organized the looting of Russia. These people are not communists. And I think you have to make the distinction. This is one of the most important transitions that took place during the 80s. It happened not just in Europe, it happened in Africa. The book I wrote on Julius Nyerere in Tanzania is exactly the same thing that happened in Russia. You have a socialist country and suddenly everybody hates socialism, and then you have something worse, namely a capitalist country. And so the same nomenclature that was telling you as a Soviet commissar, they're all capitalists now and they all own the means of production. This is something you have to figure out, and it's been suppressed. That whole story in Polish history has been suppressed. That's what Jurek Prishtava told me.
It might be true, because I've not heard of it, so it might be suppressed, actually. But it's funny that you mentioned Africans, because we were kind of waiting for capitalism just as Africans were expecting the white people, like Belgian Leopold the Fifth, to turn up and you know, be nice with them and kind of help them to evolve. And we know what happened. And this is like the kind of what capitalism is doing to people who are expecting it to be good in Poland.
Yeah, you had the misfortune of having Michael Novak show up after the communists left. and that Spirit of Democratic Capitalism was just an awful book, and that has had a damaging effect on Poland. That has a damaging effect on the church as well. There are still people who are trying to promote capitalism as somehow compatible with the Catholic Church. Read Barron Metal. It's in Polish. Read it. Okay? That'll clear up that air, clear up the air, and you'll be able to go back and deal with that difficult transition from ruthless socialism to ruthless capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the Jewish oppression crime groups that are kind of took over the world now? They're doing what like the ADL or the WJRO and such, because they seem to be like made up groups that somehow have such a great power over countries. I mean, the WJRO, they have already made Switzerland and other Balkan countries to pay the restitution.
Right.
The 447 Just Act, actually, this is what I'm getting at. What's your opinion on that? I know you're kind of up to date with all the with everything that's all the events with the that are going on in Poland, and I was just wondering what's your opinion on that? On the
it's a looting operation.
It is.
They're trying to loot the Polish people. They're trying to, as far as I know, maybe I'm wrong here, but I thought Germany invaded Poland. Isn't that true? That Poland was the victim here. Wasn't Poland the victim of this operation? So why are they blaming the victim now? Well, because they like to loot, they like to engage in looting operations. I was in Switzerland when they engaged in that looting operation in Switzerland. It was orchestrated by people like Stuart Eisenstadt out of the Treasury Department. This is the operation that puts this into practice, okay? You collaborate with them. Okay, the point I'm trying to make here is that Poland is in a much better position to resist than Switzerland was. What does Switzerland stand for? Why? I mean, it's four different languages. The only thing I think they stand for is chocolate and capitalism and banking, as far as I can. Maybe watches are thrown in there, okay? There's no coherence to Swiss culture, and they don't have a tradition of resisting. Their idea of resistance is to hide in the mountains, okay, and then wait for the tanks to go through the pass and blow up tanks from the mountains, okay? That's why Hitler never invaded Switzerland. The Swiss army took me up to these training places. I was there. I know what I'm talking about. I was at these places in Switzerland, okay? That doesn't work for the banking industry, okay? They have no way of resisting this. They did not resist. Poland has the ability to resist. Poland is already resisting the gay agenda. The, mm-hmm. the source of this resistance is going to be the Catholic Church, because you're going to have to portray this as an attack on the Catholic people, one religious group attacking another religious group. This is the only way this is going to succeed in the United States. The ADL is attacking me right now, yeah, as we speak. You know, they're doing me a favor, actually, because I'm selling more books now than I did before they attacked me, okay? But I'm betting that every time they attack me, they try and infer that I am a white racist, okay? I'm not white. I'm biracial. I'm Irish and German. I'm not white, okay? So every time I talk, I'm saying I'm a Catholic. And every time I say that, they have to change the subject, because they cannot win on those terms, not in America. And I'm saying the same thing will be true in Poland. If you have some type of Catholic solidarity, the Jews will not be able to loot your country.
The only thing, the difference that you've mentioned between the Switzerland and Poland is that the Switzerland actually has all the money, and they have committed some crimes. You know that they had the Jewish money during the World War II. As far as I'm concerned, they've had some dealings with, like, you know, they actually owed them some money. You could say that, you know, they had to compensate in a way. But what do we owe them? Like, we're completely destroyed. There was like nothing left, you know. And then we were taken over by communists for the next 50 years. So,
well, all that money didn't help the Swiss. First of all, the Swiss did make a settlement because of the Nazi thing. They already made it a settlement. The Jews had already accepted one settlement, and then the Jews decide, well, we need more money. And the Swiss money didn't stop save them. They completely rolled over and played dead. Well, I don't know what, how they don't belong to the European Union. They don't belong to NATO. They don't belong to anything. And they have the Bank of International Settlements is in Switzerland. So why did they cave in? I don't know, because they don't have any basis for resistance. You have to have some type of intellectual, moral, spiritual basis for resistance. And they don't have it in Switzerland. It's like they used to say about Prussia that it was an army attached to a country. Well, Switzerland is a bank attached to a country. You know, it's a bank, and it just happens to have a country attached to it. Okay, and that's not enough to resist. That's not what Poland is.
It's weird because there's no laws in America that would allow for something like that if it happened to America, for America to pay up. Basically, there's no such laws. Yet America, being a bully, wants other smaller countries to pay up to this made-up group of Jewish banksters from New York, who didn't help during the World War II, by the way, when the European Jews were asking them for help. Now they ask for money for like a second or third time, because Holocaust, that's why. I mean, how could this be happening? Is there no reason in America?
Listen, I'll tell you what to do. When Donald Trump shows up, say, look, Donald, you want us to collaborate? Call off your Jewish friends. Tell your Jewish friends to pack it up and leave with this 447 thing. That would be a good way to start the conversation with Donald Trump.
I think the opposite will happen now, actually. They're definitely going to push this as soon as the elections that are coming up this October are finished. I think we're going to have to pay up. And it's $300 billion that they
want. You don't have $300 billion. You can't get blood out of a stone. Tell Donald Trump, listen, Donald, you're king of the Jews, right? You just said that, right?
Right.
Then tell him to call your Jewish friends off and tell them we're not going to, no missiles in Poland, no missiles in Poland, no NATO, no nothing until you call off these Jewish looters.
Yeah. I mean, he's kind of collaborating with them, really, so I don't
think... He sure is. He sure is.
So we can just sit back and watch, really, you know. There's not much we can do at this point. There's no other government, there's no other party in Poland that could be also Catholic or, like, you know, rightfully thinking, but that would go against America. In fact, there's no other ally that we could have here except America. That's the only country that didn't invade Poland. Did you know? Like, in the whole history of the world, it's one of the few countries that didn't invade us was America.
Yeah, well, that's why Donald Trump is showing up. That's the American invasion.
Okay, Dr. Jones, I know you're a busy man. I really appreciate your time. That's all the questions I prepared for today. I think my time is up now.
Talking to you. Send me the link and good luck.
Definitely will do. Thank you, doctor. See you later. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.